is a faculty member at the University of Calgary in the Department of Psychiatry, and she has in this project brought considerable expertise methodologically from her past experience working in community mental health and community mental health evaluation. And it's really taken the lead in terms of putting together the quantitative measurement protocol. And Carol has been my right hand, and it's essential. Without her, I essentially could not have designed and implemented this project. So what she's going to talk about today is to give you a sense of some of how, even in the nitty-gritty of the methodology, we've tried very hard to be inclusive and participatory. So, Carol?
Thanks, Paula. And sorry again for being behind the podium here. I'm a bit hidden, but... that's not going to work. Yeah, you were. I'll do it for all of us.
Yeah.
So you've got a good sense now of the context and how complex this project is. What I want to talk about is the development of our measurement protocol. So that was everything from conceptualization through to selection of instruments and operationalizing them in the field. And I'm just going to focus in on three principal challenges. I mean, we've had lots of triumphs, not just tribulations, but I just really want to focus in on these principal challenges because we've really been, you know, immersed and obsessed with these things over the last number of months. So the first one was, again, getting the consensus among diverse stakeholders on the domains of measurement, the actual instruments, and then also each site chose their own specific instruments that had to be harmonized. The second major challenge was ensuring appropriateness for our population. Many of these instruments had not been used in people who are homeless with mental health issues. And then the third was this service-driven start time. When you've got 85% of the budget going into actually delivering the service, you know, you don't actually have the luxury of really getting, you know, micro-perfect on your measurement protocol. So we actually had what I'm characterizing as a live pilot. So, starting with getting consensus among diverse stakeholders on measurement domains. Now this, of course, the first place we had to start was what did our funder want from us? And Paula already talked about the principles, of sort of the outcomes of the funding agreement, which were very general, things like people with lived experience at the center, they wanted us to make, you know, improvements in system integration, some of these really, really generalized things. But, you know, the literature, and I'm sorry I don't have the citation for this because it does come from empirical work, you know, we have to take into consideration stakeholder values. So if you look at the different stakeholders in any community for any intervention, the public and taxpayers want value for money. They want safer communities, they want better life for participants as well. Policymakers and politicians also want value for money, but they often think about their own constituents' perceptions. They want reduced healthcare costs, reduced justice costs and incidents, and they also want better life for participants, at least most. Healthcare providers, on the other hand, typically focus in on reduced symptoms of illness and better functioning in health domains. Focus on health domains. And they want better life for participants. And finally, people and their families want a better life in all domains, quality of life, not just reduced symptoms. And they talk about things like wellness and recovery, better functioning in things like, you know, getting back to work or school and reduced symptoms. And there's sort of this classic, a job, a home, a friend. That's what they're interested in. And we kept this top of mind all the way along. So when we started, again, we had a national team organized, and each of the sites had to put in an RFA. But we had to start in that RFA with some, we had to float some initial ideas for domains. So we used the principles and outcomes, as mentioned, that were specified in the funding agreement. We then went to the theory, the original Housing First logic model, or the Pathways logic model of SAMHSA's program. We also looked at other mental health services organizing frameworks. And, of course, we did an in-depth going into the literature to see what similar studies had measured. So this is the logic model for the Pathways program. So you can see, and I'm not going to go through each detail, I just want to give you a sense of the kinds of things that are measured or considered important. At 0 to 6 months, there, you know, increased participation in mental health and addictions treatment is considered to be a good, appropriate outcome, but and also decreased contact with non-supportive networks, for example. So we looked at that. This is the larger organizing framework that we use. This is the matrix model, which should be familiar to most of you, the work of Tansella and Thornycroft. So we have we actually had funded a separate study to look at the system population level, which I won't talk about today. But at the service program level, Sam is going to talk more about fidelity measurement. And I'm now going to move toward talking specifically about at the individual level and the outcomes. So it's that lower right cell that where I'm going to focus in my talk now, although we considered all of these things. Okay, so after all of that initial process, we came up with these as our major outcome domains. And Paula already had these up as well, so I'll just skip quickly. Our next challenge then was to get consensus among diverse stakeholders on this stuff. You know, we had posed the domains and a set of shortlisted instruments that we thought were well evidence-based to the sites in the call for RFAs, and then they came back at us with their proposals. So here was, you know, our biggest, probably our biggest challenge. If I look at all the disciplines of the national and site investigators, and these are in order also of predominance of that discipline. So we had psychology, lots of clinical as well as forensic psychologists on as investigators, psychiatry, of course, but we also had health economics, epidemiology, sociology, statistics, nursing, medicine, education, social work, and urban geography and ethics. And our urban geographer tells us that by the end of the study, he's going to turn us all into urban geographers. So, you know, in this group of individuals, both training and by philosophy, we had some intensely different perspectives. The examples here were, for example, the DSM diagnostic system. Some of our investigator stakeholders feel that this is a complete social construct meant to control people and, you know, keep them in a disadvantaged position. Others felt that if we didn't do a micro interview according to the exact parameters of DSM, that we were actually jeopardizing publication of this whole exercise. So that's the degree of extremes. Another example, the ethics regarding participant follow-up. So we had some who said, you know, why don't we put some little geographic trackers on people and, you know, we'll know exactly where they are at all times. You know? And others said, well, you can't do that. I mean, they have autonomy. They have the right of refusal and a right to never see you again. So we had to find the balance, you know, between some of these very divergent worldviews. And we did, and I can't talk about it in great detail, but we had a consultation with our national consumer panel on many of these issues, and it was enormously helpful. So selection criteria to shortlist the instruments in each domain, we had to come up with some. So we have some working principles. We wanted the instruments to fit with the program philosophy across the whole measurement set. So we didn't want the instruments to become so unbalanced, let's say, in terms of diagnosis or symptoms versus wellness or recovery. We wanted to keep that balance. We wanted them to be evidence-based, so in several iterations, we went back to the literature. We wanted them to be theoretically suitable for our study population so that they were well comprehended, there was relevance, and that they were acceptable to our participants. And we considered the total burden of measurement as well. So here's an example of a vigorous debate we had about the generic quality of life instruments. These are utility-based instruments for the health economic analysis. And these are three that are available in the literature. And amongst our investigators, there were champions of each one of these. And so we had to keep on having the debate, go back to the literature, and at the end of the day we chose two of them because they measure slightly different things, and we couldn't get down to one, essentially. We also had not proposed all possible concepts, and we had, for example, instruments after the proposals came through added to the core set across the country because people had very good ideas and brought them forward. So, for example, our national consumer panel and consumers in our Toronto site said, you're not measuring anything about food security, and that is very important to this population. So we added that measure. We had some co-investigators point out to us that, sometimes the change in the amount of victimization after housing is quite substantial as well, and that we would do well to measure that. So we did, and we added that to the core. We also had questions about unintended effects and these stories about potential social isolation once you take a person from their shelter community, let's say, and put them in an apartment. But we recognize this very early on, so we aren't just measuring it, but actually there's been a lot of conscious attempt in the service side to include many, many social activities. So, and many of those are peer organized. So at the end, we're actually not just measuring static what happens, but we're actually trying to make a difference on that outcome right in the intervention. So I just wanted to show you that this is the group of Moncton participants and service providers. They have an organic garden, and they were involved in working in that garden for a summer, and a couple of participants then got continued employment in that context. So our next challenge then was to get consensus on site-specific instruments. Once we had our core, then the site started saying, well, we want this and we want that in our site-specific. And again, we're thinking from the perspective of the participant who has to sit through all the core instruments and then a whole bunch of site-specific instruments. So we were worried about all those many additional instruments. Many of them were very clinical and psychopathology-oriented. Some of them duplicated the content in the core. So we were really concerned about two types of burden. One is just the sheer time to do these interviews, and also the invasiveness of asking so many symptomatic questions over and over and over. So we had, again, followed through and modified our principles again to say we want the design to focus on the differences between groups, not so micro on individual changes over time, such as a clinician might be interested in. We reviewed everything for impact on the total study. We asked them to limit their length to 15 additional minutes, which I think crept up. But anyway, so we have these kinds of principles. I think at the national level we felt like we were putting ourselves out there with all these measures, and we had to defend ourselves because the attacks were coming, and I think the sites had this perception. Enough said. And, at some points we just had to say, okay, well, we differ on this, but here's where we're going to come down, and some people are going to have to let go of their favorite measures. So this is the core measurement framework again, and I just want to point out very quickly the things that we've added in color there. We've got all the things that you would expect, but we've gone more into depth now. We're actually measuring a history of adverse childhood experience, which is very important to outcomes, including physical and mental health outcomes. We've got our food security scale in there, as I mentioned, and we're measuring perceived recovery. We think this is probably the first time in mental health services research in a trial that perceived recovery has been measured. And we've got the property and person victimization. Next challenge was ensuring appropriateness for our study population, that is, getting the bugs out of these instruments. So we did a pretest study. We used cognitive interviewing techniques in three of the sites. We tested items for comprehension, recall, relevance, and sensitivity. And we used the findings to modify items where we could. Sometimes you can't modify. So you just modify the preamble to the instrument, or the information helps to interpret a later stage. This work is now in press in the Journal of Urban Health. So an example of pretest. So, for example, when we were trying to test on comprehension and recall, we tested the memory of substance use history. When did you first start using? And we found that recall was very good because it's a very salient event. We also tested for relevance. So, for example, we had many items about community integration that were very sort of middle class oriented. And we also reworded some things based on feedback. So an item on the community integration scale, gone to a church or place of worship, has been changed to gone to a place of worship or participated in a spiritual ceremony. I'll just skip over. So that, again, is our data collection protocol at the core. That isn't even including all the site measures, and you've seen that because Paula had it up earlier. So this third challenge, then, was the service-driven start time. We were getting ourselves like very loaded up for this massive measurement exercise. We had all kinds of people involved, and we were told you have to start October 2009, ready or not. So we had to set up a data collection system. We had to enter and test all instruments in the information system and train interviewers in the interviewing and follow-up techniques. Just a quick note that our data collection system is internet-based, highly designed for privacy. We procured it through a competitive process, and it actually handles the randomization for us as well. And our research assistants use laptops and internet keys in the field. So we had to get all of this infrastructure up as well. I just want to mention that we continue to train. We have over 100 RAs. We use multi-pronged follow-up strategies, including our RAs are right out there in the shelters and on the street looking for people. And we're providing monetary compensation. By progressive, I mean we increase it from beginning to end. And that's our cartoon about the compensation. this is our group of research assistants, some of our research assistants from all the sites, just so you can see. So this is how we felt. We were told we had to start. We knew that some of the instruments were not quite ready, but away we went. This is, but, you know, I'm sort of feel like this is where we are now.
I actually feel like we should hand out balloons. Can you see how rare it is to have someone with that depth of expertise and also a good sense of humor? And you absolutely had to have a good sense of humor to make this thing work.